Right now, I'm very happy to welcome back to our program an old friend, Craig Aaron, President and CEO of Free Press. Craig has been a leader in campaigns to protect net neutrality, stop media mergers and consolidation, and opposed unchecked surveillance for many years. Craig is the editor of two books, Appeal to Reason, 25 Years of In These Times, where he used to be an editor, and Changing Media, Public Interest Policies for the Digital Age. Craig, it's great to have you on the air here tonight in honor of a very well-deserved victory, and congratulations, of course, for a really stunning triumph in the courts in terms of upholding the concept of net neutrality, which we'll get to in a moment. But, Craig, maybe I can ask you first just to just say a bit about the work that you've been doing there at Free Press for over a decade.
Sure, and thanks for having me back, Scott. Always a pleasure to be on the show. Free Press, we're a national, nonpartisan, nonprofit organization. We like to say we fight for your rights to connect and communicate. And we try to get the public involved in important media and technology issues, those kinds of issues that have been for too long decided behind closed doors without any public involvement or consent. We're trying to change that and actually bring the public into those conversations on issues like net neutrality, media ownership, the future of journalism, and internet freedom in general.
Great. Well, Craig, maybe to introduce this topic of net neutrality, because probably most of our audience has heard our many discussions and here and elsewhere. But after years of battling giant telecom companies, politicians in the FCC, your group, Free Press, and your many allies across the country won a landmark victory in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit when judges upheld the principle of net neutrality for free and open internet. Maybe just define that term, if you would, as we talk about this,
sure,
victory.
Well, net neutrality really is just a way of saying no discrimination. And it means when you go online, you can go wherever you want, do whatever you want, download whatever you want. It's not up to your phone or cable company to decide which websites are going to work and which won't. And for nearly a decade now, we've been fighting in Washington to protect net neutrality. And through some previously, I think, unfortunate court decisions and a lot of unwillingness in the past of the Federal Communications Commission to act, net neutrality was really in jeopardy. We were facing a future of the Internet that, you know, doesn't look like the free and open Internet we've enjoyed, but looks a lot more like cable television. But we saw a big reversal thanks to really an unprecedented amount of public pressure, millions and millions of people contacting the Federal Communications Commission throughout 2014 and 2015, finally getting the FCC, which had attempted time and again to pass really watered-down net neutrality rules, finally getting them to stand up, do strong net neutrality rules, really restore their authority under the Communications Act, authority that had been sort of abdicated during the Bush administration, restore it, make sure they can make strong rules and step in if phone or cable companies are messing with people's internet experience. And this has been a long fight, but a good one in a lot of ways, because it really shows when you don't accept those compromises, when you don't go back into court with sort of half measures, you actually can win. And that's what happened here. The FCC finally did the right thing, went in with their strongest legal case, and they were awarded for doing so. The judges at the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals on a 2-1 decision ruled completely for the FCC. They won on every issue in the case, and this was really a resounding defeat for the phone and cable lobby and for their very expensive lawyers that they sent in to try to overturn those FCC rules.
Craig, maybe you can speak about the opponents, those challenging net neutrality all these many years. What was beef? What was their beef? What was their goal here? Was it just profit, pure profit, or was it something else?
Yeah, well, I think these are very profitable companies, but of course, you know, it's never enough. So we're talking about the nation's biggest cable and phone companies, Comcast, Time Warner Cable, now Charter, AT&T, Verizon. You know, these are the companies and their trade associations that we're fighting to change and then overturn these rules. And, you know, essentially it's about power and control and who's going to be in control of the internet. Is it going to be internet users? Is it going to be a wide open space? Or is it going to be something where a big company can pick and choose the channels for you? And, you know, a company like Comcast really wants to be a gatekeeper. That's what they're used to being over your television set. They want to extend that power to the internet and, you know, really want the ability to control the pipes, decide which sites and services are going to work the best, be able to extract more money from other big companies to be able to reach customers, customers who, of course, are actually paying them to get online so they can use the entire internet. But in the mind of these big phone and cable companies, I think, you know, they see themselves as the gatekeeper, the go-between, and they see many, many ways to profit from scarcity instead of just providing a big open pipe, high speeds where you can do anything. If they can control that experience, they can favor their own sites and services. You got to remember, these are companies heavily invested in the content business. Comcast owns NBC Universal, for example. And so if they can give themselves a little leg up, an advantage to their own sites and services, they're going to take it. And of course, that's why we need a Federal Communications Commission. We need a counterbalance. We don't want the government to be in charge of the internet, but we do need somebody with some power who can step in when these big companies are abusing their market power.
Now, Craig, maybe we could review a bit about President Obama's role here. His appointed chairman of the FCC, Thomas Wheeler, was somebody who was an insider, right, from the cable industry. And I know that you were quite disappointed with some of his earlier decisions. There was a massive coordinated campaign to put pressure on the FCC and the Obama White House to move towards a very clear policy favoring net neutrality than Wheeler had. And that seemed to bear fruit. Maybe you can speak about, was it the public pressure alone or President Obama leaning on Wheeler to say, hey, look, get in shape here? It's hard to know the inside story, but I'd love to hear your view here.
Share as much as I can. I mean, I think it was a combination of all of the above. If you go back to 2007, you know, candidate Obama had been a very outspoken champion of net neutrality, somewhat famously saying he would take a backseat to no one on the issue. But in the first Obama term, after the FCC lost a case, a previous case in this whole fight, when they were sued to overturn some rules by Comcast, they really backed off, and the first chairman of the FCC, a guy named Julius Genachowski, was really unwilling to make the tough political choices to stand up to these companies. I think there were a lot of people in the White House who were unwilling to challenge these companies during the first Obama term. As we got into the second term, you know, we were certainly very worried. Tom Wheeler was a guy, he'd been the head of the cable lobby. He'd also been the head of the cell phone lobby. We were very skeptical about what kind of FCC chairman he was going to be. We asked him to prove us wrong, and it turns out that he did. You know, he really did eventually step up. Now, it wasn't without a lot of pushing and prodding. After the FCC lost the second round in this fight, again, failing to sort of do the fundamental thing, which was restore their authority under the Communications Act, what's called reclassification or Title II. This was sort of a linchpin in this whole approach, and the FCC had been afraid to do it under a lot of pressure from industry. And Tom Wheeler himself had no intention of doing what I would call real net neutrality, and he made a series of proposals that were sort of fake compromises and tried to push them forward, but he was met with this immense public opposition. And people have been campaigning on this, myself included, for years, you know, going back to 2005, 2006. But in 2014, we really saw an unprecedented upswell in public interest and opposition, and people willing to protest, camp out at the FCC. We staged big protests there, lots of creative actions, and it really turned the debate around. There was a much different story in the press. You know, celebrities like John Oliver and others got involved, helping popularize the issue. And there was a lot of organizing that went on, really put pressure on the Wheeler FCC and started to move them in the right direction. Eventually, 4 million people contacted the Federal Communications Commission, which is far more than it contacted them on any other issue ever. Even that time, Janet Jackson flashed the audience at the Super Bowl. That was, I think, number two. This was far, far beyond that. So a huge amount of pressure and attention, And eventually it did get to the White House. And I think after losing the midterm elections in 2014, seeing this immense amount of public pressure coming in and realizing they could actually do the right thing, the Obama administration, to their credit, finally came up very strongly for the strongest net neutrality rules. So that was definitely a turning point. That really helped shift the political conversation. So essentially, the public really pushed the president and Wheeler. The president's action created the political space for Wheeler to move further. And then to his credit, he did the right thing. You know, by February of 2015, they passed really strong rules, the strongest rules on net neutrality. They reclassified broadband, which was the key because that's what gives them the authority to address really any problem that could come down the line. And they moved to defend it, and they did very well in court. Under previous administrations, they really bungled these cases in court, but not this time. They did an excellent job. You know, groups like ours intervened. We also had an opportunity to argue on behalf of the FCC in court. And they won, really running away. There's not a lot of a light in seeing how this decision, you know, could be really challenged or overturned. It seems very solid, and it's very clearly in favor of the FCC. So it's been a big turnaround. It won't be the last chapter in this fight, but the momentum for a change, and this is really a big change when it comes to telecommunications policy, the momentum is actually on the side of the public. And an agency did the right thing and was rewarded for it. And, you know, by the time we were done at the FCC, the chairman, you know, who I had been critical of at various times, but, you know, he was calling it the proudest public policy day of his life. And he's really lived up to that. So I do give, I haven't liked every decision they've made, but I do give Tom Wheeler and the staff at the FCC a lot of credit for getting this one right.
Now, Craig, maybe you could just mention a bit about the importance of using Title II as a justification for the net neutrality rules, not to get too obscure, but it was certainly key, and you've referred to it here a few times tonight. But
yeah, it's really the most important thing about the FCC's ruling and the court decision. And frankly, it is why the phone companies and the cable companies fought so hard, because even though the FCC has insisted it's going to what's called forbear from a lot of the parts of Title II if the law was written back in the 90s, you know, they really fear, you know, sort of rate regulation and other things that could in theory, although it's incredibly unlikely, come from this authority. The key here is it's Title II that gives the FCC the authority to step in and say you can't block websites, you can't throttle, you can't offer special favors to your own service, no special fast lanes. And, you know, this is the part of the law, the Communications Act of, originally the 1930s, updated in 1996 was the last time it was updated. And this essentially, it defines the Internet as a telecommunications service. Telecommunication service in this case really just means two-way communications. It's not a one-way broadcast channel like television or like cable TV, which is regulated differently. And what the Bush administration had done back in the early 2000s is they had said that broadband wasn't going to be a telecommunications service, even though that's the way the Internet had always been treated in the dial-up era. And they redefined broadband as what's called an information service, or Title I, essentially conflating that pipe going into your house, your broadband service, with websites and LexisNexis and other kinds of content, search engines and things that travel over the Internet. And that was a really big mistake. I mean, for one, it was just factually wrong. And for two, it really limited the FCC's ability to crack down on wrongdoing. So when Comcast got caught blocking lawful file sharing and the FCC tried to slap them on the wrist for doing so, Comcast sued saying they didn't have the authority, and they won. And then when the FCC tried to again claim under Julius Genachowski that they could enforce net neutrality under Title I, Verizon sued them and the courts threw it out. So Title I was a very weak approach. It really limited what the FCC could do and encouraged them to do it in all kinds of messy ways, when the obvious solution was to go back and say, you know what, the Bush administration under Chairman Michael Powell got this one wrong. It's not enough to protect the open Internet. We need to go back to Title II and treat broadband what it obviously is, a two-way communication service. And that's exactly what they did here. And the court has endorsed that approach. They've been very clear that the FCC, you know, had the legitimate authority to extend that to our mobile phones, our wireless connections, Internet you get over your smartphone, which was a very key part of the decision to make sure that when you go online, it doesn't matter if you're using your laptop, your computer at home, your iPad, your iPhone. It's all the same Internet, and that's a really important principle. So that's why that Title II piece was so key, and it really is what gives the FCC the clear authority to step in if there are, you know, future kinds of wrongdoing, other ways companies are interfering with an internet connection. It gives them the authority to investigate, sanction a company, and you know, really keep them honest, which is the key. It's the threat of FCC action very often, even more than direct FCC action, that keeps these guys from doing, you know, bad things.
I would imagine that invoking Title II will not only secure the current net neutrality rules as it has before the court, but also when it comes to setting a precedent for use of Title II in future technological innovations that maybe we can't even conceive of today, right? I mean,
yeah, I think that's the really important part, is what you don't want to do as an agency like the FCC or in any kind of congressional action is limit things in such a narrow way that a slight change in technology makes them ineffective. You know, you don't want the government getting in the way of innovation, but you need to have basic baseline public interest protections. And essentially that's what Title II is. And, you know, it gives the FCC some leeway to step in when there's a problem. For example, right now the FCC is looking at privacy issues under what's called Section 222 of the Communications Act, and actually stepping in to try to figure out what are phone and cable companies doing with our private information. They have a lot of information about us. You have to tell your cable company or your phone company where you want to go on the internet. That's how the internet works. That means they have a lot of information, and we need to know more about what they're doing with it. Who are they selling it to? You know, what are they doing with our most private information in terms of marketing it, selling things back to us, going to other companies? That's been a big mystery and kind of a black hole. Title II gives the FCC the ability to step in and take a look at that. And there are many, many examples. You know, they've been very clear. They got rid of a lot of the old phone-related regulations that are in there. They're not trying to apply those to the internet. They've been very clear that's not their intention. But when you've got companies that are constantly trotting out schemes, imposing completely unnecessary data caps, looking to favor certain content or, you know, allow some of it to count against your cap but not other things, you need an agency to be able to step in, ask them what they're doing, have engineers who can look at it, make sure that what these companies are doing is actually fair. Because that's how you benefit as a consumer. You want competition, you want choice, you want new businesses to be able to get off the ground, and importantly, you want freedom of expression. You want to know that this program has just as good a chance as of reaching its audience as Rush Limbaugh does or MSNBC or anything else. That's the beauty of the open internet, is that when you go online, you decide what you're going to get, and you should get that information unfettered and just the same, no matter who's producing it.
We're speaking with Craig Aaron, President and CEO of Free Press, and we're talking about the victory in a recent court decision for net neutrality, allowing a free and open internet. And congratulations again, Craig. I wanted to just explore with you in the couple of minutes we have remaining about future challenges, because certainly the fight for unfettered communication in our country and new technologies and ensuring there is an even playing field so we can utilize these new technologies on an equal basis, that fight is far from over. And I know your group is continuing to push in many different directions. Now, maybe two of the things we'll have time to explore in the next 5 minutes or so we've got left is FCC enforcement of the rules now on the books and upheld by this court, as well as access. Access to the Internet is huge, and I know that's something on your agenda.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to take that, I'll take the second one first and then come back to net neutrality and the rules. You know, affordable Internet access for all, you know, is really why we care about net neutrality, why we want to make sure that, you know, everyone has access to modern means of communication and make sure that when they get there, they actually find meaningful information about their community. That's our priority at Free Press. So ensuring universal internet access is a very big deal for us. And, you know, the nature of the digital divide is changing. Internet service is available just about everywhere, broadband service in the United States. But the reason that not everybody has, about a third of the country doesn't have access to the internet, is because it costs too much. It's unaffordable. They've been priced out. And that has everything to do with a lack of competition, Most Americans have only one choice of internet service provider. If you're talking about any kind of high speed, something like, 96-97% only have two choices, when it comes to high speed internet, which is not enough to keep prices down, as it'll be incredibly obvious to your entire audience that subscribes to the internet or cable television. Prices only seem to go in one direction, up and up some more. So we have a real competition problem in this country, and that's proving to be an incredible barrier for people getting online. Because even as the internet becomes as important, you know, right up there with food and water, you know, it probably ranks right alongside hot water, you know, on the list. People are having to make tough choices. In tough times and, people with not a lot of disposable income, the internet becomes very difficult. Maybe they can afford to get it on their phone, but not have the connection at home, even though that home connection is so essential for school and getting a job and everything else. So I think this is going to be one of the big priorities. We're really pushing, the presidential candidates and the political parties to address this crisis of affordability, to prioritize, internet access for all. We just, put together a whole big platform that includes a number of issues, but access is one of the pillars, internet, policy platform, for 2016, which about 18 different public interest groups signed. And I think it's going to be huge. That's where so many of the big fights and debates are going to be. And it's really where we need the FCC to be focused. What are they going to do to encourage competition? What are they going to do to encourage different kinds of deployment? And how are they going to make sure all these great benefits of technology, are extended to all Americans? And especially certainly poor Americans, communities of color, vastly underserved, compared to their richer and whiter counterparts. And that's a big public policy challenge, and a place we're falling behind the rest of the world. On the other issues, you know, in terms of the FCC taking action, you know, certainly we want to make sure that now that they won this case, now that they have this authority, that they're going to be willing to step in and use it, if there are, violations. That's sometimes been a problem at the FCC in the past, an actual willingness to take action. So we'll definitely, as we see violations emerge, you know, definitely be stepping in to sound the alarm. Probably the most immediate concern is actually Congress. You know, there's a suite of bills. I think I counted 6 different measures, these riders that are trying to be snuck into must-pass budget bills as we speak this week in Washington, trying to really attack both of these issues, trying to prevent the FCC taking away their budget to enforce these rules. There are attempts to undo some very common sense reforms on issues like set-top boxes that they want to put forward. There's an attack on the Lifeline program, which the FCC is trying to extend to broadband, which is an essential program for connecting poor folks to phones. Now an opportunity to extend that to broadband, but the Republicans in Congress are moving to stop that. So there's a lot of work still to be done to get these riders out of the budget bill, to make sure that all of Congress and the president are aware of they're in there, so they can be cut out of these bills if they're negotiated and they go through the Senate. We've been successful in doing that a number of times, but they do keep coming. So the fights will continue to come. These companies haven't given up, unfortunately. You know, they may try to appeal to the Supreme Court. I think they have a very weak case, but they have a limitless budget. So they'll continue to try to make it difficult for the FCC. We've come a long, long way in actually getting an agency to do the right thing for once. Now we have to protect that and make sure they actually use the power that they have when we need it.
Well, Craig, this is great to review this victory. It's an important victory. I want to certainly extend kudos and congratulations to you and the whole crew over at Free Press and allies and activists all across the country that made this victory for net neutrality and a free and open internet possible, and your stick-to-itiveness and getting this done. And as you said, the fight's not over. Lots more to do in terms of access and enforcement. So thank you so much, Craig, and leave the listeners, if you would, with the web address for Free Press and the resources that I know people will be interested to see over there.
Sure. Everything you ever wanted to know about net neutrality, you can find it at freepress.net and savetheinternet.com. Lots of links to the great work going on. Sign up there and we'll send you alerts when there's something really important happening, and also connect you to the many, many great groups working on these issues in Washington at the local level, our great network of allies that made this victory possible. And thanks for all your help in drawing attention
making this, really making this an issue over the last, I dare say it, close to a decade.
Yep, we've been doing it. Thank you so much, Craig. We'll look forward to the next time we talk. Take care.
Sounds good.
Bye-bye. That's Craig Aaron, President and CEO of Free Press, talking about net neutrality and the court victory there just within the last week or so.